time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, all right, all right. Happy Friday. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Paul Gallant is still enjoying his vacation. We don't know where he is. We hope he's okay. We hope he's consuming a lot of water and resting up, because this has been a long vacation for Paul.
It's been a very long vacation.
It's a little concerning.
Yeah, I hope he's not passed out on a beach somewhere, or maybe I do hope he is. Maybe that would be awesome, depending on where he is.
Yeah.
It may or may not be safe.
He's got a lot of weddings to attend. Yeah. Paul's a big wedding guy, a big take the tie off and get loose at weddings.
Well, he's a big go to other people's wedding guy. No, I'm not going to call him out like that. Where do you think he is in the world right now?
I think it's Puerto Rico.
You think it's still Puerto Rico?
I think it is still Puerto Rico.
I feel like maybe he's back in Croatia now, just jet setting across the world. Yeah, back to Yacht Week.
I'm Paul. I go to Yacht Week. We got Josh Beard in for Paul Gallant. We have all week. He was in for me before that. So, Josh, we appreciate you hanging with us as Paul and I both took consecutive vacations. You've been a trooper, and we certainly appreciate you. We have Brian here at Cobos Q, and then we have Sean Mapes behind the glass at the studio, speaking of which, we are at Cobos Q. If you're not here and if you're not coming here today, I don't know why you would not. It is the perfect spot. We have this delicious food in front of us. I actually am ashamed to say I've never been here before,
right.
But I'm coming in here, and I'm smelling it. And I'm sold.
Yeah, I love this place. I want to stay here for the rest of my life. If they'll let me move a bed in here, I think that'd be great. I'm going to have to talk to them about that. But, like, guys, come out to Cobos Q. Come hang out with us. Come meet us. I dress sexy for everybody today.
Oh.
This is the most dressed up I've been since 2019, I think. So come in here. You
2012 Rusk
Street.
It's pretty close to Minute Maid Park.
Very close, yes.
Before the Astros game today, after this weekend, we got some early games. I know because I'm hosting pre and post game. So come to Cobos Q. We certainly appreciate them hosting us. All right. Yesterday was one of those annoying days, Josh, where after the show, we had all of the news break. But that's okay. That means that we get to talk about it today. Kevin Durant, if you haven't heard by now, has requested a trade from the Brooklyn Nets. It's for the third time in 6 years. Kevin Durant is on the move. Initial thoughts when you saw this news break?
Initial thoughts were, I'm trying to wake up from this nap that I just decided to take, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I take one nap, and all hell breaks loose in the NBA. What's going on with that? So my initial thoughts for Kevin Durant were, I thought this was all solved when Kyrie decided to opt into his contract and stay with the Brooklyn Nets. I thought for sure that meant, okay, whatever rifts there were, it's patched up. KD's going to be happy because he gets to keep his guy. Maybe they can try to make a trade or bring somebody else in. They can retool and see if they can do it. Ben Simmons definitely wasn't the answer for them. James Harden obviously wasn't the answer for them. But I have a theory now that I've had a chance to sit on it with Kevin Durant. If you look at the teams that he put on his list of possible trade destinations, the Miami Heat, the Oklahoma City Thunder are the two that we know for sure are places that he has on his list of trade destinations. We've heard the Lakers. We've heard the Sixers. We've heard the Celtics and other teams like that. I think Kevin Durant wants to go somewhere where he can clearly be the guy.
The guy.
Yeah, the guy. If you think about his history with the Warriors, his two championships, anybody can talk about is, well, the Warriors won before him and the Warriors won after him. It's mostly because of Steph. He wasn't the clear-cut number one when he was in Golden State. Steph was 1A and Kevin Durant was 1B. Why would he want to go to L.A. when he's not the clear number one? Why would he want to go to Philadelphia when he's not the clear number one? I think that Kevin Durant wants to move to a place where he think he can easily get a championship in the same way he did with the Warriors, but be viewed as the number one guy on that championship team. But I think this solidifies Kevin Durant's legacy as one of the biggest NBA mercenaries of all time. And even if he wins another championship somewhere else, at least for me personally, I'll never look at him as one of the greatest to ever do it at a championship level, because he always had to go find the best situation.
So you don't have a specific team in mind that you think?
I think it's either the Suns or the Celtics.
Okay.
Yeah, either going to, because he can clearly be the number one in Boston. He's better than,
no question.
I love Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
He is definitely the number one over Jason Tatum. And if he goes to Phoenix, he's definitely the number one over the corpse of Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Love Devin Booker, but he has some issues. He's still a little young. Kevin Durant would clearly be the number one. I think it's going to be the Suns or the Celtics. Selfishly, I want to see him go to Miami because I would love to see how Jimmy Butler and Kevin Durant try to get along.
Yeah,
that would be a
nice soap opera. I always say when guys are seeking a trade or even with free agency, I think sometimes fans, and you know, we are fans ultimately, yeah, assume, well, they're all chasing the money. That's not always the case. And in fact, they're not always chasing a championship. You can tell me till the cows come home that Tyreek Hill believes in Tua Tagovailoa.
Right.
The long and the short of it is that he left the Chiefs, right?
Yeah.
So it's always interesting to see what guys are chasing, guys and gals, with like WNBA free agency and trades and what they want. What does this mean for Kyrie? April 25th. Let me take you back in time a little bit. Allow me to take you back in time. Kyrie not only thought that he and Kevin Durant were going to be together forever, but he had this to say about a possible front office role.
When I say I'm here with Kev, I think that it really entails us, you know, managing this franchise together alongside Joe and Sean and just our group of family members that we have in our locker room and in our organization.
If you're Joe Tsai, if you're the owner, and you're an accomplished person, and you hear somebody that wouldn't get a shot or wouldn't do whatever,
right,
say that he wants to help manage it with Kevin Durant. I mean, they were talking this morning on ESPN, and I think it was Brian Windhorst that was like the collective gasp in that room of like, you have the audacity to say that you want to help manage a franchise. So what does it mean for Kyrie Irving? Because remember, he quote-unquote bravely opted in to take the $37
million. Man, I just don't know. Like, he wanted to try to find a sign-and-trade partner. When he realized nobody actually wanted to sign and trade for him, he's like, don't worry, guys. I'll opt into this contract, and I'll stay with Kevin Durant. We talked about that the other day, and I just never thought in a million years that we would see this Kevin Durant news. So I have no idea what this means for Kyrie Irving. He's had ties to the Lakers are going to make a push for him. The Lakers are going to make a push for both of them. I don't see any world where the Nets would want to take back Russell Westbrook and
Anthony
Davis.
See, that's what Brian Windhorst had said. He had said that the Lakers simply like the idea, not so much of Kyrie,
but of
swapping Westbrook for Kyrie.
Yeah, but again, like, so swapping Westbrook for Kyrie, if that's the straight-up swap, that's perfect for the Lakers.
Sure.
Like, that's, and Kyrie on a basketball court, I love Kyrie Irving on a basketball court, obviously. Like, the things that he can do when he's playing basketball and focused on playing basketball are incredible. He is an incredible player. But it's the Kyrie off the court. You know, that's the problem. Like, Lakers fans, if they get Kyrie Irving, they're going to have to spend an entire season trying to convince himself, you know what, maybe the world is flat. Maybe Kyrie was right all along, and we love him being here. Like, Kyrie is just an issue off the court, but playing, he's fine, and I would rather have him on the court with those guys than Russell Westbrook. I'm going to call him that, and yeah, I would call him that to his face. Don't worry, Russell, I got you.
Yeah, but you're not going to break his spirit.
I will
or
not.
Whatever,
yeah,
Beyonce.
Definitely not going to break his spirit.
I thought our Jake Gasman had a good tweet.
Yeah.
The Rockets trade with the Nets for James Harden is about to become an all-time haul.
Yes.
2023 Nets first-round pick swap, 2024 Nets first-round pick, 2025 Nets first-round pick swap, 2026 net, blah, blah, blah. You get it.
Yes. Yeah. This was all along when Kyrie Irving first asked to look for a sign-and-trade partner, and we thought, and then Kevin Durant was keeping an eye on the situation with Kyrie Irving. And all along we were kind of talking about it. We were thinking about, this is huge for the Rockets. I know Roosh on Twitter is somebody a lot of people follow, Bima Thug, another person that a lot of people follow, talking about, here are the ramifications, and this is why it's so good for the Rockets and for Rockets fans, for the Nets to kind of implode and fall apart. It really is. I mean, you can do a pick swap this year, and let's say the Nets are just, they're led by Patty Mills and Ben Simmons, and they're an abject failure. Well, let's say the Rockets take that step forward that we think they're going to take. You can do that pick swap. Then you're in the lottery with at least one pick with the Nets the year afterwards. Then you can do another pick swap when the Rockets are finally coming into their own with guys like Jalen Green and Jabari Smith and all those other picks that have made them even better. The best part about it, though, in my opinion, is as the Rockets are continuing to grow, those later picks, the 2025, 2027 picks, or I guess, sorry, the 2024 and the 2026, those can be used as assets in a trade for another star. So if Jalen Green takes that step forward again this year, if Jabari Smith turns into the guy that we think he's going to be, Alpi is at center just wheeling and dealing and scoring, right? They can then go make a trade for a guy who could be a huge asset. Maybe there's a veteran who wants to move to a young team a la Chris Paul, and you can use those first for it. So this is a great spot for the Rockets to be in. This is exactly, if you're a Rockets fan, you wanted this to happen to the
Nets. Speaking of the Rockets, they brought back Jayshon Tate.
Yes,
and it
perfect.
Didn't break the bank.
Right. I think he was a little bit more than some people expected, but I was listening to a couple of guys on a Twitter space last night talk about it, and one of the best points I heard made was, they kind of lucked out with the amount, the defense that he brings, with the versatility that he brings as a player. If he had shot just a little bit more efficiently from three, he may have cost an extra $10 million, and the Rockets wouldn't have been able to bring him back. So they kind of lucked out on being able to sign under that contract.
Absolutely. We'll be talking, of course, about this news and all of the NBA news, because it wasn't huge yesterday, but there were some murmurs of Zion. There were some other things. We'll be addressing that, of course, throughout the show. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, the Big Ten moves west. What does this mean other than, as we know, money rules everything? That's next.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting InnovationMap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, big news yesterday in the college sports world. The Big Ten, I remember when they added Rutgers, Maryland, and it was just like, I'm from the Midwest, grew up a big Ten watcher,
right.
Indiana fan specifically. Thought it was weird, a little bit far out. Geographically, nothing compared to yesterday's announcement that USC and UCLA will join the Big Ten in the 2024-2025 academic year. This seemed to come out of nowhere. Usually with a lot of these moves, you hear about it for a while.
Right.
Like, you had heard about Texas, you know, rumblings about that. You had heard. This seemed to be out of nowhere, and it was quick. There were a lot of tweets from insiders talking about how it was basically a vote, and each Big Ten member, president, etc., said, yep, we want them. And it's very simple. It all comes down to money. USC and UCLA are going to get massive TV contracts. It's great for the Big Ten financially. What were your initial thoughts and impressions when you heard this?
Well, weirdly, it's not like I even have any ties to the school at all, but my initial thought was, what's going to happen to, what about Oregon? Like, Oregon's just going to sit there in the Pac-12 that's now it's a completely destroyed Pac-12 conference. It's not even going to be close to what it ever has been before without USC and UCLA. And so what's going to happen with them? I mean, I know there's still going to be a couple of schools there that are bigger schools. Who is the Pac-12 going to bring in to kind of help bolster that? But I initially thought of Oregon, and then I started to think, like, the logistics of travel for those two teams and the other teams in the Big Ten. I have a big problem with mismatches, regional mismatches in conferences. It really frustrates me and bothers me. I thought it was weird with the SEC. You know, you typically think of all these schools that are in the Southeast. Well, then you bring in Texas or Texas A&M, and Texas A&M is kind of like, I liked being in the Big 12 as an Aggie fan. I love the rivalries there. I've missed the rivalries with Tech and with Texas and Oklahoma. But it was fun moving to the SEC. But regionally, it didn't make a ton of sense. But at least we were kind of close to LSU. We were kind of close to Arkansas. Like, it made sense regionally. Now we're talking about a whole half of the United States in between USC and UCLA and all the other schools. And, like, Big Ten is traditionally, like you said, Midwest. I don't know. There's so many logistical problems. I have so many issues with California teams playing against Midwest teams.
It makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. It's all about money.
It absolutely is. And I'm personally tired of the NCAA acting like they care about academics at all.
Yep.
Because you're going to have a Purdue softball player missing 3-4 days of school because it's going to be a plane ride, which, oh, by the way, is more money out of the athletic program's budget, to go to California, play a tournament, come back. I mean, I tweeted this out yesterday, and I firmly believe it, that it's time for college football to just separate.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and you could argue maybe you put basketball, men's basketball, in that conversation at certain schools too, like at Indiana, men's basketball brings in a lot of money. But football is just so separate. Does this make sense for football and TV deals? Absolutely.
Yes.
Does it make sense for the swimming team and the golf team and lacrosse and volleyball? Absolutely not. It's just becoming a different era. And I know I sound like an old man right now, but where are the days of hopping on a bus and playing a team within your state and that rivalry and those families? And that, I mean, you're going to have a bunch of Midwest dads in California that are complaining about traffic and restaurant prices and the taxes. Okay. I mean, I'm speaking of my kin, by the way, whom I love
right
dearly.
I feel like
I'm speaking
attacked.
Of my people. And then you're going to have the California people coming to the Midwest wondering where all the vegan options are for dinner. I mean, it's just, with all seriousness, it is all about money. But it doesn't make sense for the majority of the people it's going to impact.
Yeah, agreed. What's funny is, you know, I lived in California for 2 years.
That's right. I always
stationed out there. I was in Monterey, California, which, if you've ever been to Monterey, is one of the most hoity-toity areas of the Bay Area, because that's where they've got huge golf tournament there. They've got huge car shows there, and the houses out there are exorbitant amounts of money. And I got to live out there for a couple of years with my wife. The first day that she lived in Monterey, it was such a culture shock for her, having grown up in Texas. That and the way the people treated her, she got into a car accident. She was told it was her fault, even though it was an older guy in a Mercedes. My wife.
Your wife, okay.
Even though it was an older guy in a Mercedes who swerved into her lane and hit her. And it was like the guy was berating her and yelling at her for it being her fault. And then she got into somebody else at a shop in downtown Monterey berated her and yelled at her for something. She came home crying that day.
It
was such a shock.
So different.
Yeah, it is.
When I covered the Super Bowl in L.A., now I had been to L.A. before once, but it was in high school. You know, that doesn't count. It is a major, major culture shock. No, people are not nice. Yes, everything's expensive. Yes, there are a lot of things that are, you know, you could go on these references of different places and the culture shocks all day. I totally, you know, see where your wife's coming from on that. I think that when you take inventory from the priorities, we've always known that the NCAA is not putting, you know, the kids first.
No, they never are. They act like they are.
They act
they
like
love
they are,
to act
and
like
then
they are,
punish
yeah.
kids yeah. as if they care. Yeah. You know, some of the before NIL, that's why, look, NIL is a slippery slope. I'm not saying it's perfect, but thank God these kids can finally make money off of something that the universities have for years. Let's talk about the local impact of this. What does this mean for the AAC and Big 12, U of H? What does it mean for the smaller schools like Rice? Because what a lot of people think is going to happen within the next 5 years, 10 years at the most, is two super conferences, and then what happens to the rest of them?
Yeah, so a lot of people, instantly people are going to think, okay, this gives us an opportunity. Now we can move up into the Big 12, and we can move up into the Pac-12. Maybe we do end up getting the two big, massive super conferences sooner rather than later. But all this does for those smaller schools is, yeah, they're going to get to move up into these conferences that have traditionally been bigger, right? They get to move into the Big 12. They get to move into the Pac-12 that have traditionally been bigger and been major conferences. They're not going to be majors anymore. That's going to be the thing. They're going to become the new AAC. They're going to become the new whatever, what is it, Pac? Sun, stuff like that, like the new Big 12 and Pac-12. Yeah, like yes,
<It's a> store.
Yeah, that's a store, but that's fine. the Sun Belt, something like that. Right. You know what I mean? I just mix the Pac-12 and the Sun Belt into the Pac.
Yeah, I was like Pac-Sun.
You can go watch your football and get your jeans at the same time. It's an incredible deal. But I mean, that's essentially what's going to happen is these bigger conferences. They're just going to lose the historical grandeur that they've had. They're not going to mean nearly as much.
And the rivalries and the traditions,
they're gone. Nobody cares about as soon as Texas A&M bolted for the SEC, and I love Texas A&M. I love my Aggies, and I know I'm probably going to get some pushback for this, but they ran to the SEC as fast as they could to get away from Texas. They did. And as soon as that happened, I knew no rivalry. There are probably very few rivalries in college football that matter more to these schools than money. Texas A&M ran because they knew they could get better recruits, they knew they could get more money, and they were whining about Texas, the UT, the Texas network deal, the Longhorn network deal. And they ran away from the University of Texas. And it was all about getting more money and the fact that they were mad that they didn't get as much money as Texas did. So as long as money is involved, no university cares about a rivalry if they can make money by moving.
Absolutely. We'll see how this impacts local teams. We know that there's going to be some movement we expect within the next couple of years. The official dates we don't know. But Notre Dame. Okay, listen, I'm from Indiana. Can't stand Notre Dame. Notre Dame fans, the arrogance, all of that. But Notre Dame brings in the money, and they have a massive TV deal with NBC. How does this impact Notre Dame? Because what a lot of people were saying yesterday, you have to think that the ACC is calling them and saying, now is the time.
Yeah, I would imagine so. The ACC, if you're, you know, I didn't even think about the ACC themselves. They have to be scared. The ACC has
Pac-12
to be worried.
Pac-12 should be scared, and ACC should
be
scared.
Well, Pac-12 should definitely. I mean, they have two of their biggest schools leaving. I think scared is an understatement. The Big 12 should be scared. That's an understatement, too. The ACC is the one where they still have Clemson. They still have Florida State. They still have these big schools that are a part of them. But when are the SEC and the Big Ten going to come calling with all these? That's where, if I'm the ACC, I'm like, Notre Dame, please, please, please. If I'm the ACC, and now that we know that regional divides don't matter at all, if I'm the ACC, why not call up Oregon? Why not call up Stanford? Why not call up some of these other big dogs that are left? Exactly. The rivalries don't matter. Regional rivalries don't matter anymore. So why not call up some of these bigger programs and say, you know what, Notre Dame, come here. Let's say Oregon, come here. Just come play in our conference. You can be a part of this. We're going to make more money if we do it. And then at least try to give yourself a puncher's chance against the SEC and the Big Ten.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallon, our NFL countdown continues. Which player, past or present, and obviously we want your input on this, was or is in the perfect situation for them individually? That's next.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
All right, we are at Cobos Q. The food here is delicious. The owner here is here. He's super nice. I'm Vanessa Richardson. That's Josh Beard in for Paul Gallant. And we're rolling along, guys. Happy Friday. 70 days until the NFL season. Josh Beard, every day Paul is tasked with picking a jersey number that coincides with the days left until the regular season. What is your number 70 jersey number pick?
My number 70 jersey pick, I probably should go with Jim Marshall, but I never watched him play because I wasn't even born whenever he played. So I'm going with Logan Mankins. I think Logan Mankins had an incredible career in the NFL. I think he's probably one of the – I'm trying to stay away from a certain town up north of 45 because I may or may not have gotten in trouble for that. Recently,
because you
Vanessa.
Went with the NBA it's, during an NFL segment.
It's still the best number 77.
That is irrelevant.
Fine, fair. But I'm going to go with Logan Mankins. Part of me wanted to go with Zach Martin, but I think it's Logan Mankins for sure.
Okay. All right, cool. So we're going with that. all right, our NFL question of the day, and we asked you guys this. Feel free to text in the show, call in the show, let us know, tweet us. Which NFL player is in a perfect situation? Jordan Poyer was talking about how he can't think of a better place for him to be than Buffalo. He's obviously a safety, and if you are on, I mean, hell, if you're any position in the NFL, Buffalo's a great place to be.
Right.
But their defense is stacked. Obviously, they added a lot of pieces in the offseason. Which NFL player do you think, past or present, is or was just in the perfect situation for them and was a perfect fit?
This is a really, really good question. Man, it's really hard for me not to choose. It's really hard for me not to choose Tom Brady. It really is. Like, I know Tom Brady is the GOAT. He's the greatest of all time. And he has done great things, won Super Bowls since his time in New England. But I really feel like he went to the perfect place for him, being paired with Bill Belichick. I can't think of a better, more successful duo as a coach, a head coach, and a quarterback than Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. I can think of another couple of guys who are in perfect situations. Like, I think Tony Romo was in a great situation with Jason Garrett. They both just kind of got each other.
7554 on the text line says Dan Marino. That's a good
Dan
one.
Dan Marino's a great one. Never won a Super Bowl, though, so that
right.
sucks. But he was one of the greatest ever. Dan Marino is, if you could pick any quarterback ever in the history of the NFL, if you're starting them from their prime and you say you're starting a team, depending on what team you want, Dan Marino is probably the quarterback most people should pick for their team. If you say, I'm starting a team, you could take any player from any era at every position. Dan Marino should be over Peyton Manning, over Tom Brady. Dan Marino, he was throwing 60-yard bombs more accurately than almost anybody we've ever seen in the NFL. I think another good one that the engineer here, Brian McDonald, just showed, Patrick Mahomes is in a perfect situation in Kansas City. I don't know why I'm going to quarterbacks.
Right? I mean, I think quarterbacks, too, it's not the easy way out, but it is. I mean, it's easier to think of because they're so prominent and they're the most important position in American sports. So, you know, you certainly look at, like, you know, with Tom Brady, who his coach was, the fact that those guys would probably never hang out outside of work, but they just got each other.
Right.
They're both psychos. They both demanded excellence.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with an Aggie. I'm going with Von Miller.
Oh, I love
Von
that.
Miller,
that's a good pick.
Obviously has won two Super Bowls with two different franchises, the Broncos and the Rams, and now he's with the Bills and definitely has a chance to win another Super Bowl with the Bills. Not only that, he's managed to get paid every time. He's managed to have good relationships with those around him every time, to the point where when he left the Rams, Sean McVay literally said, dude, I would love to keep you, but go shine elsewhere.
I mean,
so he's done it the right way. He's gotten his bag. A lot of times, guys, if they want to join these great teams, they have to take a pay cut. Von Miller hasn't had to do that.
Right.
Von Miller has managed to get paid, and every time has just had a coach that he gets along with, it seems like, unless he's hiding something from the public. He's had great teammates. I know what his position is, but he's gotten along with the quarterbacks, and he's played with excellent quarterbacks and excellent defensive guys as well. So for me, Von Miller has – I don't want to say he's found himself in these situations because I think he's picked carefully.
Yes.
But he's just been in really, really great situations every time. Somebody said Jonathan Taylor. Look, I'm a Colts fan. Jonathan Taylor was not in a great situation last year. That is not even, I think, up
for
debate.
You didn't like Carson Wentz throwing him the ball?
Yeah, I don't think that
the exact average
was,
of the NFL quarterback?
I think that there was maybe some tension there.
I'm going to try to pick somebody outside of the quarterback position.
Okay.
I'm going to pick an old dog. I think Troy Polamalu was in the perfect situation in Pittsburgh pretty much his entire career. He always had defensive coordinators that knew how to use him that would come in, and I think a lot of the times they would specifically mold the defense around the way he worked. And I know people have this debate all the time. Who's the better safety, Ed Reed or Troy Polamalu? If you look from a passing game perspective, who is better at defending the pass, it's definitively Ed Reed. You look at his interception numbers, his pass deflection numbers, Ed Reed beats Troy Polamalu in that area. But from a versatility standpoint, the way he was used within defenses, both moved up a little bit, moved back a little bit, playing the pass and playing the run, Troy Polamalu is the most versatile safety we've ever seen in the NFL, or at least one of the most versatile safeties. But I feel like he was always in a great position in Pittsburgh. And they would bring guys in that would specifically mold the defense around him to be in the perfect position.
Sean Mapes, what say you?
So I had a couple written down. The first one that came to mind is Ray Lewis with the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a really good one.
And just he, not only was he in the perfect situation, I think he also made it more perfect. He really, like, he built the identity of the Ravens. Because they're a young franchise when he got there. I also had the Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne from your Indianapolis Colts. Perfect situation. Got an all-time great quarterback throwing you the ball, and you're paired with another awesome wide receiver. And then the Legion of Boom guys, just all of them.
Richard
Sherman, that whole attitude that defense had, perfect with what Pete Carroll was trying to build in Seattle, and it won them a Super Bowl, almost won them another.
And they had a coach that was like, look, I'm not a rough and tough guy, but great. Go do your thing. Those are great options. Let us know on the text line, who was an NFL player in a perfect situation, past or present? Moss going to New England, says 9695. Yep.
Yeah.
That's a really, really good one. Like we said, the quarterbacks, it's pretty easy to kind of tell who was in the perfect situation.
Yep.
Or who wasn't.
Sean brought up the Seahawks and the Legion of Boom. Marshawn Lynch, his stint in Seattle was probably the best place he could have been and that he could have gone to, because he was utilized in the exact way you should have used Marshawn Lynch. My earliest memory of Marshawn Lynch is him at Cal destroying the Aggies defense with the Prudential Bowl or whatever bowl had the big whale. They always had the commercials of the big whale, maybe the Holiday Bowl, but Marshawn Lynch destroyed that Aggie defense in that bowl game. And I thought he was just going to go to the NFL and just destroy everybody in the NFL. And we didn't really see him do that until he went to Seattle, but it was the perfect spot for him.
Yep, absolutely love that. All right, let us know what you guys think. We are, again, at Cobos Q And we got these. We got this food in front of us. We're going to have to at some point take the dive in. It's early in the morning. It's only 10:40 a.m.
It's never too early for
food. But it's not too early for food. And that brings me to our question for the next segment. I'm going to ask it in advance so you guys can text us in and let us know. What type of food could you eat for the rest of your life? When I say type of food, genre, etc., you could go barbecue, Mexican, Tex-Mex, Italian, American, Indian, I don't care. Let us know. That's what we're asking. All right, NFL countdown, 70 days, guys. Has there ever been a Texans player that you felt like was in the perfect situation? Obviously, we know that whatever it is, it probably didn't work out. I would go with DeAndre Hopkins because he had a great quarterback. At the time, he and Bill O'Brien got along.
Yeah.
He had a great defense. He was in Houston, a city that he liked.
Yeah.
It was the perfect situation until it wasn't.
It's hard for me to pick D-Hop, maybe for like a year or two, but all the other quarterbacks that he went through, and he still put up numbers and he still dominated even with those guys, but it's hard for me to pick him. I think J.J. Watt. If I had to pick any Texan, it'd be J.J. Watt. B-Mac here, it said Arian Foster would be his pick. Arian Foster, the only thing that stopped Arian Foster was the injuries, but you talk about the scheme that Kubiak was running. He was running that old zone run scheme. Arian Foster was the perfect zone running back. I mean, it's one cut and go through the hole, and he was perfect for Kubiak's system. This just injuries ended his career.
This is a great question. Did Sean come up with this?
Maybe. I didn't come up
Sean
with that.
Mapes, did you come up with this
yes,
question?
Yes, I came up with this.
I love it because you know what? It has to do with money, with being on a winning team, with having a great quarterback, a coach that you happen to get along with or that you at least get along with at work. Like I said, my answer forever and always is Von Miller just because he's now on his third excellent team with a great quarterback. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, Josh Beard, of course, in for Paul today. We're going to talk a little bit about the Astros, what we expect from them this weekend. Plus, we want your answers. What type of food would you eat for the rest of your life if you had to pick one type of food? Let us know. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. It's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from Cobos Q in Edo for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
We are having fun at Cobos Q. Get your booty here before or after the Astros game. Of course, you can come see us. We're here all day as well. The food smells wonderful. They have all the TVs you could need. They will have the Astros broadcast tonight that's on Apple TV, so come to Cobos Q. You will not regret it. I know I speak for Josh and I. We're both probably going to smash some food after the show and need a nap because it's so good.
Yeah, I'm going to have to stay here. If they could just clear out one of the tables, I don't know if they've got like some sheets or a blanket or something, clear out one of the tables, let me take a nap on that afterwards, because there's no way I'm driving home after I eat without falling asleep.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. We're excited. So, we're rolling along. Let's talk a little Astros, guys, since we are near Minute Maid Park. They beat the Yankees 2-1 yesterday. Tonight, again, the Angels at the Astros. What are you guys looking forward to this weekend?
I'm looking forward to the Angels continuing to suck with two of the best hitters in baseball.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's my favorite thing about baseball right now after the Astros is watching a team in the division have two. Like, it's not even like they're two pretty good hitters. It's not like they're even two good,
one of them's historic.
They're literally, like, generational-type talents. Mike Trout, there was a video of Mike Trout in one of their games the other day where he's out in center field, and you could see him visibly frustrated on the camera that the pitcher was tipping the pitches, and he's just like, he's showing him, he's like, you're holding your glove out here, you need to hold your glove closer, like you're tipping your pitches. And to see how frustrated he is with the situation that he's in and knowing the contract that he signed with them. Shohei Ohtani is one of the most amazing players to watch in all of professional sports right now, and somehow this team can't find a way to put it together around these two guys. In fact, they get into brawls that cause one of their pitchers to fracture his elbow and they have to put him on the IL, which is hilarious. So I'm looking forward to the Astros dominating the Angels. It's going to be so much fun. Here's the best part. You can watch the Astros against the Angels, and you can enjoy the greatness of Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani without being worried that they're going to do anything to you as a team. It's the perfect scenario. It's like when you have a fantasy player where you're like, well, I don't want him to beat my team, but I want him to do well. It's like that with Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout.
It's one of the reasons why it's kind of cool that Carlos Correa went to the Twins.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You can still, and like George Springer is in a little bit of a different situation, but yeah, when a good player, we just talked about chasing the bag and different priorities. When a good player is on a crappy team, you know, you're like, oh, you know what? I still like that guy. I very much, it's like my Nana used to say when she'd have Alzheimer's and she couldn't quite remember you. I used to like you. But tonight, the Angels at the Astros, and then that series continues this weekend. All right, we asked you guys in the last segment, because we are at Cobos Q, which combines kind of Tex-Mexy, some barbecue concepts. It's a really unique concept. What type of food could you eat for the rest of your life? For me, far and away Mexican. I love Mexican food. I could have it for every meal. It is one of those meals that puts me on my butt and puts me asleep after I have it. Like in college, I used to try to, like, we would eat Mexican food and then go out for the night. And then, like, I'm like, I have a stomach full of guacamole, nachos, chicken, all of the things. I cannot go to a club right now. And by the way, I shouldn't be wearing a crop top because I'm bloated. So what type of food could you guys eat for the rest of your life?
Tex-Mex is that, like, I'm going home after I get done eating type of meal,
right?
Especially for me. Like, I'm not a small gentleman. I'm a larger guy. And, you know, bad things happen when I eat Tex-Mex. This is a really tough question for me. I think this ventures on the close into the realm of bullying for somebody like me, but I won't consider it bullying on your part. I know you didn't mean it. But trying to force me into only one food genre, only one food category for the rest of my life, but I'll go ahead and play the game. It came down to between pizza and an Asian delicacy is how I'm going to phrase
Asian
it. Yeah.
Asian
delicacy.
Can you expand on Asian
because,
delicacy?
Look, because it could be Chinese, it could be Japanese, it could be Korean, and it could be Thai. It's all that we'll say Far East delicacy is the category that
You're
I'm picking.
You're better with geography than I am.
I am cheating just a little bit because there is a multitude. It's all very similar. They do some similar stuff, but I do get differentiation if I go with Far East delicacy. So I'm going to choose that. Pizza was a really strong candidate. I think I could get away with eating pizza at breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The problem is there aren't a lot of light options for pizza. Like, I'm already not small. I'm trying to be better about that. I've been losing weight. I'm going to continue losing weight. If I had to eat pizza for the rest of my life, I would be 700 pounds within the next week. And
see,
so,
like,
that's
even
not going to
happen. Like, when I say Mexican, like, you could do a taco salad.
Exactly,
You could finesse Mexican to where you're not. It's not always terrible for
you. And that's why I'm going to go with Far East delicacy, because I could go with, like, a nice red curry for lunch. It's got a little bit of chicken in it. It's not super fattening. It's very filling. And then at dinner, I could go with, like, some pad thai or some lo mein or some fried rice. Like, I could really mix and match it. I could have some lighter stuff. Maybe one day I have, like, I have orange chicken with some fried rice on the side and an egg roll. The next day, I want to go a little bit lighter. I could have, like, broccoli and beef with some
white rice. Twitch said seafood for sure. Seafood's
a good one.
That's
a good one.
It's very specific. And you know another very specific one we got was on the text line. Somebody said German food. Schnitzel and beer is all I need.
Yeah, German foods. I think you really, really have to have an appreciation for German food to really like it. I love sauerkraut. I love different types. There are a few different great Czech and German restaurants all around Houston that I've been to that I absolutely love. There are some places that make the best bratwurst, the best sauerkraut. You really have to have an appreciation for it. Oh, really? Not at all.
Yeah, it's just not my thing, and I've never liked it since I was a kid. I don't like sauerkraut. I'm not a big sausage person.
Right.
I'm
a huge sausage guy.
Yeah. But I will say I lived in Cincinnati, and Cincinnati has a huge German population. And so they would have a really good, what's it called, German Fest?
Yeah. Like a beer, like a...
What? Oktoberfest. Thank you, Oktoberfest.
Yeah. Almost a beer fest. That's a movie.
Which was a lot of fun. Sean Mapes, what's the food that you could eat, type of food you could eat for the rest of your life?
So I have one answer that I feel very confident in, one that I think is a little bit cheating, but since Josh took Far East delicacies, I think now it's well in my right to take it. So my first one is barbecue. I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Love it.
Won't be a long life, but I'll get the most out of it. And then my cheating one that now is not cheating in the grand scope of things is breakfast food. I feel like I could have breakfast.
Yeah,
every
I would. I don't think that's cheating. Yeah, I think breakfast is a genre. I think breakfast is a genre for sure. I think that that's another one that would knock you on your butt. But man, barbecue. Barbecue is something I crave every now and then, and the amount of salt I consume, I wake up the next day and feel like I have a little bit of a hangover, but God, it's good.
I do love barbecue. I think maybe I've just had so much barbecue, I don't think about it as a category, because I'm usually smoking a pork butt, a brisket, or some ribs every weekend. Like, every weekend I choose a different slab of meat
that I'm
cooking.
Yeah, I mean, we're in Texas.
Yeah, so,
and I will say, I didn't realize when I moved to Texas how big barbecue was here. Like, you know barbecue's big in Memphis.
Right.
You know that, you know, from the outside looking in. Somebody said Josh would eat mayonnaise sandwiches. Heyo.
I would, yeah. I would do that. Gross. Like, mayonnaise sandwiches are delicious. Look, they're good with regular mayonnaise. If you want to get a little bit fancy with it, go out and get you some
hungry.
Dukes.
You know what?
Get
I
some
need,
Dukes mayonnaise.
I need you to talk about this all the time so
mayonnaise
that I'm
sandwiches?
Not hungry because
yeah.
I would lose
Are you just going to text me
weight.
Now and be like, yeah, I'm looking.
I'm really hungry.
Yeah, I'm really hungry, but I don't want to eat right now. Can you talk about mayonnaise sandwiches? I'm like, sure. Go get yourself some Dukes. If you want to be on the sweeter side, you can get some Miracle Whip and do Miracle Whip instead, but it's very sugary. Be ready for that sugar. That's more the dessert mayonnaise sandwich, I guess. If you
oh,
had,
God.
You could do like Duke's.
Okay, we're done.
You could do
that's
Duke's
disgusting.
Mayo and
dirty
okay,
rice,
sorry.
Red beans, and fried golf fish. That's the meal. It doesn't sound terrible.
Sounds really good. Seafood's a good one. I like the breakfast food one because it's really versatile.
Yeah.
I'm all about
it
versatility.
Very, it is. But you sound like Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
That's a word. Versatility is a word that triggers me now after covering Bill O'Brien because that was the number one thing he would say when he was bringing play.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love his versatile. He's very versatile, very instinctive. Now I can't hear those words.
AFC champs 2 years in a row. AFC breakfast champs two
AFC,
years in a row.
Yeah, Brian. God, never forget that man. Which food could you eat for the rest of your life, we ask you, as we are at Cobos Q for a remote. The Astros playing this weekend. This is the spot before and after the game. Or, hell, if you don't have tickets and you want to watch the game. They have a lot of TVs on in here. They have some racing, which I definitely appreciate. But they have excellent food, great drinks. So come to Cobos Q before or after the game. And we continue our show. After the break, somebody said, so he's a sausage lover and a mayo enthusiast.
Love
yes.
it, yeah.
Yes, he is. There's nothing wrong also with just admitting that you freaking like food. You
I
know?
Love food.
I love food. Yeah. I love food. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, what a day it was for the NBA and some of the news surrounding that. We're going to talk about the big storylines, plus a Deshaun Watson update as much as we can. That's next.
ESPN 97.5.